Do you like using fresh herbs when you cook? I know I do. But in the wintertime, they can get really expensive if you have to buy them. So we have a solution for you. Grow them yourself. Hi, Jill Nadeau here. I'm in for Larry Mueller today. Our guest is Elizabeth Millard, and she is the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening. She also leads workshops on vegetable and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. And she has an organic farm, and she grows plenty of things on the outside as well. So she can answer all kinds of gardening questions. Have you had good luck growing produce inside? Are you having problems growing herbs? Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And of course, you can always post on the Larry Mueller Facebook page. Well, hi, Elizabeth. Welcome back.
Hi, so good to be here. Thank you.
Now, you talked to Larry a couple of years ago, didn't you?
I did, yeah, when the book first came out.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And how are things going for you?
It's great. Since then, we've moved to our own spacious farm. Ooh. With probably a few too many animals.
Well, tell us about your farm. I love the name, by the way.
Oh, thank you. Bossy Acres.
Yes.
It is named after the attribute that my partner and I have most in common. So we've just gotten more and more bossy over the years.
I see. I thought it was, you know, you call cows bossy. Have you ever?
I know.
Okay.
We've been thinking about getting cows, but we hesitate because it's like, well, then people will think it's that. But right now it probably should be sheep and goat acres.
Okay.
That's what we're rocking.
Okay.
Yeah, we're in northern Minnesota. We're in a town called Bruno, which is a big metropolis of 102 people. And we love it. It's just fantastic up here, but we came from Northfield, Minnesota, which is a different zone. So what we've been trying to get used to is growing in colder weather. And fortunately, I have this book in front of me that's all about indoor growing that I worked on really hard. So, so we can use a lot of those skills.
You know how
here.
To use the tips, right?
Yeah.
Well, how did you get growing stuff inside anyway?
Well, actually, I was living in the city in Minneapolis, and we had plans to start a farm, but it was October, and we just got really eager to get in there, and I think every gardener knows that feeling when they look outside, and it doesn't quite sync up with your desires. And so we thought, well, we'll just, you know, we'll grow a few things inside, and then that, of course, blossomed into this basement full of herbs and microgreens and projects and experiments, and it was just really fun from there. So I was just in South Minneapolis with a basement full of greens.
And legal sure greens,
my,
right?
Legal my neighbors, greens. Thank you for not calling the cops on me because it looked a little suspicious.
I'll bet. Well, what do we need to grow herbs inside?
Well, the first things, I think, is just a proper setup. So there's a lot, it seems like there's a lot to it, but it can be deceptively complex. So the first thing that you would need is light. So a lot of people think they need some kind of special indoor grow lights or these, you know, there are grow lights that are hundreds of dollars and you can use that. I mean, if you really want to spend a couple hundred dollars on a grow light, then I'm not going to stop you.
Well, but, I don't want to, so tell me what I should get.
Yeah, I wouldn't think so. But, you know, a lot of what you need is a full-spectrum fluorescent, which is usually what you'll find underneath a kitchen counter. So a lot of kitchen counters have that light underneath whatever the shelving is, just already. Mm-hmm. And so you can use that. Or what we do is set up just some shelving, some wire shelving, so it's got a little bit more airflow to it as opposed to like a bookcase or something. And we just buy shop lights from, you know, like a hardware store.
Right. Good old really, shop lights.
Yeah, really cheap. Yeah. Good old shop lights. You've got those big bulbs and just plug it in and you're good to go. And so you've got the light, you've got the shelving. And then I guess the other really important thing is the containers that you're using.
Okay.
Herbs hate to be wet. A lot of people make the mistake of overwatering. And So if you already have herbs at home and they're struggling, just maybe think about cutting back on the water a little bit. You have to be a little benign neglect works pretty well. So the container should be something that has a lot of drainage that you can take to the sink and water them and then let them drain. And then, you know, the herbs themselves.
Okay, so, and what about the soil?
The soil, I usually use any kind of indoor potting mix. We're an organic farm, so we love the organic world of potting soil, but a little bit of compost from outside. We tend to use something called vermiculite, which can kind of loosen up the soil. It goes back to that drainage. You want the soil to be kind of loose, not sandy, but I've tried to grow herbs before in a not organic, not indoor soil mix, and it's just way too dense, and it made them unhappy. It made me unhappy.
Do you grow your herbs from seed then?
I grow some of them from seeds, and some of them I still buy as starts.
Okay.
So I think it really depends on the gardener too. If you love growing stuff from seed, then just go for it. You know, it's all an adventure, right?
But right.
There's a couple plants I can never seem to get basil to grow really well for me, except as microgreens, and I don't know why. I just, you know, every house is different in terms of its humidity level and light and water. And so there's a really good nursery near here, and they grow beautiful basil. So I cheat a little bit and I go get that.
Well,
it's easy. Once it's established, then it's fine.
Once it's established, it's good. Okay.
Right.
Elizabeth, let's just go to the phones. We've got all our lines are filled. So let's go to Anne, actually, in Random Lake, because she has a question about basil.
Oh, no.
Okay. Oh, yes. I'm sorry. Hey, Anne.
Hi.
Hi.
My question was about basil.
Yeah.
So okay, Anne, I'm going to try it for you.
Yeah. It's just that we've tried growing it from seeds. We've transplanted plants from our garden. We bought it live at the grocery store with roots and tried planting that in a clay pot with good drainage. We have a nice south exposure with a lot of sun. I've been growing houseplants since the 70s, you know, as a teenager, and always had good luck. So I don't know that it's necessarily me, but so I don't know if you have any tips. It just doesn't seem to thrive inside.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you right off, it's not you. I'm going to give you that comfort. Basil, I don't know why it works for some people, but it's just a notoriously difficult plant to grow inside, which is odd because it grows so well outside. And I have had a little bit of luck with changing up the variety. I mean, if you're doing maybe trying like the sweet Italian basil, that tends to work the worst for me. But if I try to do a Thai basil, that works a little bit better. And the other thing I would think is clay pots can be tricky inside because the indoor environment is so much drier than it is outside. And clay pots and terracotta pots tend to be to dry it up even more. So you might want to try maybe like a plastic flat or ceramic or something that just kind of holds the moisture a little bit more, which sounds counter to what I was saying about herbs getting wet, but as long as it's got good drainage, I think it that should help.
Okay. Does that help you, Anne?
Thank you.
Okay. It makes you feel better. My outside basil didn't even do well this year, so
It's a weirdly fickle plant.
It is.
Especially inside.
And we love it so much.
I know.
All right. Well, let's go to Melissa in La Crosse. Hi, Melissa. What's your question?
So I am pretty new to the indoor gardening. I started three pots in my kitchen. They have a nice sunny window. The cilantro and basil I started from seed, and yay, the basil's actually working a bit.
Yay!
Oh my gosh, you totally answer Anne. but I did a mint plant from, I started with the plant that I got from a local greenhouse. And it was doing so well for a couple of months. And then all of a sudden, my countertop around it was getting sticky. And it had these little sticky bumps all over. And I think they were little dead bugs at some point. And now the whole thing is dead. And I've had to toss it out. I want to start over, but I don't know if where these bugs came from, if they were something that came in during this at the end of the season, or if they came with the plant or the soil, or what happened, and how do I prevent them for the next time?
Sound familiar, Elizabeth?
I've had the nice thing about indoor growing is it tends to have less, obviously a lot less pest issues. But yeah, I've had aphids inside in the middle of winter, and I thought, where did these come from? It's so odd, and it could be in the soil. So if it's a well-established greenhouse, that's great. Did you transplant it into, I assume you did, transplant it into your own soil?
I did. I got a bag of black gold because that sounded like the best thing. And
yeah, that's
and it was organic and some really cute pots that have good drainage, and it, all of a sudden, those bugs appeared. Now, they haven't moved over to the cilantro or basil that I can see, but I don't know.
But with the sticky stuff, is that scale? Am I thinking that right? Because I'm thinking house plants, which is similar, that you get that inside during the winter. Does that sound familiar to you, Elizabeth?
Yeah, and that can happen too. And the only thing I'm thinking is maybe, like, how were you in terms of the watering? Because what happens is I'm just going to harp on this a million times, but if people water herbs too much, it makes them more vulnerable to disease and other problems. And you would think that you would water them just as the same amount as houseplants, but that's not true. So that might have been an issue, I'm thinking. It's nice that it didn't go over to the other plants. So,
well, and Melissa, you know, you can always try one of the UW Extension offices too. They can give you lots of help. So you can try that.
I can give that a shot.
Okay. Well, good luck. All right. Well, let's go to Piper in Sand Creek. Hi, Piper.
Hey, top of the morning to you. This is kind of an offbeat question a little bit, but I got like 15 horseradishes growing out in my garden, and I have three of them in pots. And I already brought those in the house. Just throwing it around a little bit, I wondered if you could tell me what I'm going to be looking forward to. The ones in the pots, they're growing good. They're hard to kill. But also, how should I store the other roots that I have?
Did you, how long have you been growing this horseradish?
Pardon me?
How long has the horseradish been growing? Have you had it for a couple of years?
This would be my second time around the mother plants. Okay. I just dig them up and I cut the tops off and put them back in the ground and cover them up in a little straw. They always come back every year.
Right. So you're bringing them in the house. Why?
Well, I brought the two that I had in great big clay pots. I brought those in the house. I'm just going to let those grow if they keep growing.
Okay. So you're afraid they're going to freeze in the pots?
No.
Because, I mean, horseradish, you know, is just fine in the ground all winter long. I think it likes it.
Yeah, and we keep our horseradish in a pot as mm-hmm. well, but we leave it outside and overwinter it. So, yeah, I'm interested, why bring it inside? You wanted to see if it would continue to grow inside?
Well, last year I dug them all up and I put the old roots, or the last year roots that I harvest, I made a couple quarts. And then I took the other roots and I put them in a plastic bowl and covered them up, and I kept them in the basement. But as I grind them up, they get so hard, I almost got to hydrate them before I can get them chopped up again to make fresh horseradish. So I was just wondering what anybody else does with their roots, where they store them, or do they freeze them, or...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Oh,
it's the
okay.
roots themselves.
Yeah,
I don't
know. So we let them dry, the same as I would, like... any kind of herbal root like valerian, and then I grind it. So I don't need any moisture content to it, or I grate it, and that tends to work pretty well. And I just make sure to open all the windows.
it's strong. Well, if anybody's listening who, you know, has some answers here for Piper's question, please just give us a call. Our guest is Elizabeth Millard. She is the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening, and she also leads workshops on vegetable and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. What gardening questions do you have? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Right now we're talking about gardening herbs and, well, other gardening. And speaking of herbs, Elizabeth, you're going to be in town in a few weeks, aren't you?
I am on November 5th at the Madison Herb Fair. I'll be the first presenter at 9:30. I'm really looking forward to it. The Herb Fair seems really exciting. They're going to have some vendors there selling fresh herbs. Maybe some basil, so we can all get our fix.
Get our basil fix, yeah.
And, yeah, there's three presenters that day. Really exciting. The one right after me is Kathleen Wildwood with Herbal First Aid, and then they have a presentation on hops. So people should definitely come down and check it out. It's free, so might as well come and get a little insight.
Absolutely. We like free. And that's at Olbrich Gardens here in Madison. And like you said, it's Saturday, November 5th from 9 until 3. And if you go to the Madison Herb Society's website, which is madisonherbsociety.org, you can get all the information right there. So we've got a lot more phone calls. So let's go right back to Judy in Grafton. Hi, Judy.
Hi, good morning. I brought my rosemary in, and it was looking just great. It really is a beautiful plant, really developed into a big plant this year. Mm-hmm. And I was downstairs just a little bit ago, and she's drooping. So,
oh, no.
I don't know. You know, I did not. I just dug it out and put it in a pot. I didn't put all new dirt in. I did water it well, but I've learned my lesson about drowning herbs.
Excellent.
I'm wondering if I should clip it back, or what? Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, clipping it back is a good idea. You might want to. How warm is your? You said it's in the basement.
Yeah, it would be 60s, probably okay. Down there, and it's by a patio door. So it should like if it likes warmer, I could bring it up. I've got a south window.
Yeah, I'm wondering if it might want it a little cooler, because usually what happens is when you bring herbs inside, or any plants really, then you need to have that transition. It needs to have that moment where I usually put mine on a heated porch or like in a breezeway or something that's a little bit cooler than the house, just to kind of give it a nice transitional period as opposed to being in the ground and then all of a sudden it's in the house. So that's one option, to just put it someplace a little bit cooler for a couple days and see if it perks up. That has worked for me in the past. The other thing is you can do some bottom watering. Usually herbs, you're right that they don't, especially rosemary, likes it very dry. But if you want to perk it up a little bit, put a tub and then whatever container you have that rosemary in, set it in there. And then the herb will take up the amount of water that it needs. And then, clipping it back is a great idea. Maybe giving it a little bit more light. I don't know what kind of light setup you have there, but it might have more limited light inside than it had outside, so it's kind of freaking out a little bit.
Well, just like we gradually put our seedlings out in the spring, we kind of gradually bring them in the fall. Is that
right,
what you're
exactly.
saying?
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then, Judy, the last thing I'd say is if you could increase the airflow a little bit, because what plants want is a little bit more of an artificial representation of being outside. So sometimes if the air is too stagnant, it doesn't give them enough oxygen. So if you have maybe a small fan in the basement, it doesn't even have to be on the plant. It just has to circulate the air a little bit better.
Okay. Well, good luck, Judy. I hope that works out for you. Let's go to Kevin, and he's in Bellevue, Iowa. Hi, Kevin.
Hi. How are you doing?
Well, what's your question?
Well, I want to grow spinach for the first time inside the house, or some greens. just wondering, mediums, my exposure, sadly, is on the northeast side where the windows are, in the lower part, and somewhat up on the upper part of the house, but limited space. I'm just kind of wondering thoughts about temperature, soil temperature, and how it thrives best. I thought about going to mesh and getting some organic soil for that, or, you know, a mixed soil that would be helpful for it. But any thoughts about growing spinach inside?
Yeah, I've grown spinach inside many times, and it's a really fun and easy project, and plus spinach grows pretty quickly. So that's always nice. The other thing that you could consider is growing spinach along with a few other greens mixes. Wherever you go to get the organic soil, you could probably find a greens mix that spinach is part of, and that's always a nice idea. And the other thing is, if you're concerned about the light, you can do what I had said in the beginning and just get like a little shop light. It doesn't have to be one of those big, you know, you're going to work on your car kind of shop lights. They sell them that's just like 6 inches or 12 inches or just a little under-the-counter light to have closer, and that helps a lot with getting them established, because they're going to need a little bit more warmth and a little light a little bit closer.
Okay, well, good luck with the spinach. I think I might try that myself. Let's go to Yasser in Milwaukee. Hi, Yasser.
Hello, good morning. I have a couple of questions about mint.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
Okay. I grew mint outside in my backyard. In fact, I had planted a lot for different friends, and of course, mint will spread. I mean, you have to sometimes control it so that you don't
have it everywhere.
I know, but it's the territorial
yes.
nature of
it. Yeah, but this is really a nice like strain of mint. It's very potent. My first question, I try to grow it in the basement, and I actually bought from Menard a special light, mm-hmm. and it didn't work. Now, I tried to bring some in a pot inside and put it next to a window where it has a little sun. But the leaves will be really small compared to what is outside. My second question, I promised this little community that I'm going to make a community garden of mint for them. Do you think I can take it out right now, plant it in the ground, and trim it, of course, because of the winter? Or should I try to plant that garden in the spring?
Okay, let's do this. So in terms of the mint that wasn't working in your basement, I would say that the same issues apply, where there's light and airflow. A lot of times in the basement, I mean, when we were planting a lot of plants in the basement, it wasn't working for us until we set up a couple fans. And the plants need airflow for oxygen, but they also need it to, they need to be a little bit stressed to be able to grow stronger. Like, we all need a little stress to be stronger. There, that's my big hippie rule of the day. So you might want to try that. Also, basements sometimes get, they're either too humid or too dry. If you don't have a dehumidifier down there, that can be an issue. So bringing it upstairs is a great idea, and the leaves are probably a little too small because it might not have had enough light. Even though you had the light there, you could try putting the light closer to the plant. So you also want to replicate a day, and this is a rule for any plant that you're growing as an edible. It needs time to sleep. Every plant needs a night and day. So you could try that. And then in terms of growing outside, I would wait and just plant in the spring. I think that trying to overwinter some mint, planting it now, the roots might not have time to establish because it might be too cold. I don't know what it's like in Iowa right now, but here in northern Minnesota, it's too cold for anything except garlic to get established.
Well, yes, there's in Milwaukee, so...
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's so, a little bit warmer down there.
A little warmer, but mm-hmm. I would still... I mean, mint establishes so beautifully. So I think I would just, I'd just wait.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you. And good luck with that. Our guest is Elizabeth Millard. She's the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening, and she also leads workshops on vegetable and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. So what questions do you have for her? Give us a call. We have all the lines open. The number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Now, we did get an email from Jeff, and he has just purchased an indoor grow tent because he wants to winter 2 tomato plants, a jalapeno plant, and 2 other pepper plants. He was successful last year, but this year his tomato plants died right away.
Oh,
and
wow.
Yeah, and he's also keeping basil and parsley and oregano in windowsills. Would it be better for him to put them in the tent? It's vented and lit with LED and fluorescent bulbs.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
I love kind of those tented projects. I'm surprised about the tomatoes. And I think, you know, what would be a fun experiment would be to kind of split the plants that he wants to try in the tent and have some outside and some inside. I mean, I think that's what I would do to try to see how it works best and how it establishes best. If he's had success in the past with growing things in that little tent, then obviously he knows about proper light and watering and humidity and things like that. So, I think that's what I would do, is to just play around with it. I mean, it's all a big experiment anyway.
Right. And so those tomato plants, do you think maybe there was just something wrong with them to begin with?
Yeah, that's odd, because tomato plants really should, they do really well in those tented conditions. Did he say that he had brought them in from outside?
Yes.
Okay. So sometimes tomato plants don't transplant very well from outside to inside.
Yeah. And I don't know if they were in pots or not. He didn't say, so.
Yeah. I've heard a lot of stories about people trying to bring their summer tomato plants inside and then having them die over the winter.
Sure.
Such a tragedy.
Yes, it is. We have such high hopes, don't
but,
we?
Yeah, as opposed to maybe, yeah, I know. It's all about hope. That's all gardening is.
It is. It is all about hope and faith, right? Okay.
Right.
Let's go to Kiana in Milwaukee. Hi, Kiana.
Hello. My question is for your guest. What kind of recipes do you have for this time of year with herbs?
I love to make a lot of pestos. And they're super easy to make. I know the biggest one is like a spinach pesto with basil. Basil is like our continuing theme here today.
It is.
So there's that. And I have recently become kind of addicted to smoothies. So I've been putting a lot of herbs into smoothies. So, you know, like a mint with a little protein powder and some, you know, arugula is just amazing. And I like to use the blender too to make a lot of green soups. So I made a kind of an arugula soup the other day with some chervil, and that turned out really nice. And I think this time of year you just want to use the herbs to feel like you're really boosting your immune system and making sure that no colds are gonna get you.
That's right. Now, have you ever done the fried sage leaves?
I have. They're so good.
I've heard they are. I want to try it, and I haven't had a chance to yet. So that's another idea, too.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So we've got an email from Sophie, and she was wondering if you could talk a little bit about growing microgreens.
Sure. Microgreens are super, super easy to grow. That's why they're so fun. They make a really great project for kids. We've hosted a lot of school groups and had them plant microgreens, and then they go and they have them in their classroom and they send us pictures, and it's all a big love fest on Instagram. So with microgreens, my favorite thing to do is to buy a mix. There's a lot of plants that will do well as microgreens, and as people know, microgreens are just basically the first stage of growth of a plant. So it's not like there's such a thing as a microgreen TM. It just means that it's a plant that's at that smaller stage of growth. It's got a super intense flavor to it. My favorites to grow are beets, carrots, and definitely the herbs, basil. That's the one time I can grow basil inside.
When it's really small.
That's it. It's perfect. And pea shoots are fantastic. A fantastic Ooh. Project.
Mm-hmm.
And the main thing that you have to do is, again, harping on the drainage. We just use a flat tray that has drainage holes on the bottom. You can get them at any garden store. And then put a little soil, just a little bit. It's, you only need about an inch. And then sow heavy. So seed them really heavily. So it's like a carpet when it grows up. For the first couple of days, you want to cover either with like a, I just use a different, another tray and put it on top, but it needs that kind of dark, warmer germination. And then you uncover it, put it under some light. Again, bottom water it the same way that I was advising with the rosemary, where you set the tray in water as opposed to watering it on top. And then, you know, in depending on the varieties, in a couple, 1 week to 2 weeks, you'll have your microgreens, and then you chop it like it's a little shag carpet.
So how tall do you get? Let them get?
Only a couple inches.
Okay.
If they get, the smaller they are, the more intense the flavor is.
Ah. And so once you cut them, will they grow back, or do you have to plant over?
They will. Some of them, some varieties will grow back, but you usually seed them so heavily that you can get a second cutting because some of them haven't grown up enough to get cut. So we've often had many trays where we get a second, sometimes even a third cutting.
Ah, wow. And as far as getting those seeds, is there a special place, or is it most gardening stores?
Most gardening, I don't know if I can I say actual places?
Sure.
We get them from a place called Johnny's online. Johnny's Seeds has a lot of organic options, and they are very well known for their microgreen mixes, and they do a great job with them.
And if anybody else has any other resources, please let us know. So we will be fair to all of those businesses.
Yes. There's a lot of really great places out there.
And John emailed us, and he just wanted you to reiterate a little bit about the fluorescent lights, and tell him what you can use.
Sure. The fluorescent lights, like I said, the shop lights, it's usually like a TH, I think, like a T8. And you can get them, we got them at, I won't mention any more stores. But
there's plenty of places you can get those.
Yeah, like a hardware store or something like that. But you want to make sure that it's a full spectrum fluorescent.
That's the key, full spectrum.
The key. Mm-hmm. There's some like funky little fun ways that you can play around with lights, like, you know, pink lights makes them grow more robust, blue light makes them grow taller, you know, that kind of thing. But really what you want is the full spectrum, because that's what sunlight is.
Right.
Full UV.
So that it's easy. You don't have to get any special things. So now we have open lines. So if you want to give us a call, the number is 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send an email to talk@wpr.org. Now, Elizabeth, you do some presentations on fermentation. We haven't really talked about that on the show. Why don't you explain a little bit about what that is and what some of the simple things that we could possibly do?
Sure. I love fermenting things. I have a lot of crocks going. Things bubbling in the basement at all times. But fermenting is a really great way to preserve your harvest, and it lasts for months. So what I'll do is just, like, if you wanted to make a simple sauerkraut, you just take a crock, you shred some lettuce, you throw some salt on it, you wait until the salt kind of brings up a lot of the water.
Uh-huh.
And then, because in fermentation, what you need to do is have the vegetables be below the line of the water. So that's what keeps them from spoiling. And that's your brine. And so once that water comes up, you just kind of really manhandle those, the cabbage leaves, and then you press it down under the water. You get like a plate, or some crocks come with weights. And so you press that down, and then a couple months later, you'll have your sauerkraut. Check it every once in a while to make sure it's going along happily.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we lead workshops on the farm for fermenting with just fermented vegetables. I mean, for example, that kimchi is an umbrella term for fermented vegetables that you can just put a lot of different stuff together.
I didn't realize that. That sounds very intriguing. Well, we do have some more calls, so let's go back to the phones. Marla in Milwaukee, you're up next. What can we do for you?
Hi, love your show.
Thank you.
I'm calling because I have a number of potted herbs outdoors, and I would like to bring them indoors, and I've never had a lemongrass before, and I'm wondering, can that transfer indoors?
Yeah, lemongrass is actually really good to transfer indoors because you can just put it, it roots really well. So are you digging it up?
No, I have them in pots outdoors. And do I need to repot it all in fresh soil, fresh pots?
I would. And then kind of put it with a little bit of whatever you would use for nutrition, so a little bit of compost, or you can also, I like to use some fish emulsion when I'm transplanting things. It helps reduce the amount of shock to a plant, and this is for any of your transplants. Do you use fish emulsion?
No, I never have, but I heard it's pretty stinky.
You are very right. You only need just a little bit of it. So if you bought a container of it, buy the smallest possible container, and then you dilute it really heavily according to whatever brand and directions there are. And then you just kind of spray it into the soil, and it really helps with pests as well as just kind of getting them more established, getting them that nutrition while they're making that transition.
Okay. Well, good luck with that. I know I usually try to do that too. It's an experiment, right? It's an experiment.
It is an experiment. When we plant our garlic, which we'll be doing pretty soon outside, then we use a lot of fish emulsion, and the cats love it.
Oh, yeah. Lots of friends.
Yeah, we just stink for days.
Our guest is Elizabeth Millard. She is the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening, and she is going to be answering gardening questions for us. And if you want to give her a call, call us at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Right now, we're talking about growing herbs and other things inside with our guest, Elizabeth Millard. And Elizabeth, we're going to go right back to the phones. We still have an open line if anybody wants to give us a call. We're going to go to Colleen in Green Bay. Hi, Colleen. What's your question?
Hi. I still have fennel in my garden, and I'm wondering, is it too late to harvest it, or should I try to overwinter it and see what happens next year?
How much fennel do you have?
It's a good-sized plant. So I have a couple bulbs.
I think we've grown quite a bit of fennel, and I think, as I said to one of the previous people, it's fun to kind of do both and experiment with it. I'd pull the fennel just because I love fennel, and you still have time to grill it. So go for that. But you could try overwintering a couple of them and see how it works out. Fennel does overwinter pretty well. So that, I guess, my answer is
do both. You said grilling the fennel?
Oh, I love grilling fennel.
How do you prepare that?
You just slather it with olive oil and then throw it on the grill. I take the grill leaves off. It works really well with. We also have a tendency to grill all of our romaine. Like, we are completely addicted to grilled salads.
I've heard that's wonderful. I've never tried
it. Oh, my gosh. Mm-hmm. I can't eat a salad now without grilling it. It's ridiculous.
Wow. So you just slice the lettuce in half?
If you had the romaine, you just slice it in half. Make mm-hmm. sure that you don't take the bottom off so that it's still attached.
Sure.
You drizzle it with olive oil, not so much to soak it because then it gets kind of
greasy,
weird, but
yeah.
Just enough to give it a little bit of goodness. And then you throw some herbs on, fresh herbs or dried, and grill it each side for maybe 2 to 3 minutes, and then eat it, and then impress all of your friends.
Well, there you go, Colleen. You should have a fennel party.
Yeah.
Good luck. Thanks for calling. Let's go to Kathy next in Clark County. Hi, Kathy.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I've had good success
process of bringing in herb plants and growing them in my kitchen window, mostly just parsley, rosemary, and chives. And I wanted to start them from seeds, so I bought a grow light to put in the basement, and it's pretty warm down there, and the plants come up real well, but as soon as they get about an inch tall, swarms of Asian beetles come just stick on there and knock them all down and kill them. And I'm just thinking, what's going on with that?
Yeah, I mean, Asian beetles are a huge problem, especially in basements. So have you tried starting anything upstairs where it might be a little bit less humid?
Yeah, I could do that, I guess. It's just that it was kind of it was like a big shop light, and it worked real well putting it on my husband's workbench, and I had a sheet of plastic under to kind of protect the from, you know, moisture on the bottom.
Yeah.
But
the other thing you can do is there's a certain kind of fabric. There's a plant fabric that's really porous, so it's we usually use it outside for our pests, but we've used it inside before as well. And you can get it at any garden store. It's just, you can just ask for...
Is that row cover?
Yeah, like a row cover. Mm-hmm. And you just need a couple small squares of it, and that the light will get through just fine with the row cover on, but the bugs won't be able to get in. So, and you can also tent it a little bit, so it'll be adorable when you do it, now that I think about it. But just make it like a little covered wagon kind of style, just enough to keep the bugs out. It works really well outside, and it should work pretty well inside.
All right. Well, Kathy, I hope that works for you.
Yeah, I should send some pictures in.
Yes, we'd love to see their little covered wagon.
So cute.
Let's go to Vicki in Spring Green. Hi, Vicki.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I'm wondering about planting garlic. I've never done it before, and I've always wanted to do it, and you mentioned that it was about time to plant it. So I'm well trained soil where I am, so any special I need to know?
We love planting garlic. We were running a CSA where we were growing 60 different vegetables, and right near the end of the summer, I'm like, that's it. We're just becoming garlic farmers from now on, because it's the easiest thing to grow. But so I would just say some really simple tips for garlic. We use some fish emulsion, which is really helpful. So just hoe a row. You plant garlic with the pointy side up. So you'll take a bulb, you'll separate all of the cloves, and then plant it pointy side up about 7 or 8 inches apart. Just cover it with soil. You don't need to hill it. And then mulch it super heavy. The other thing that we do is we give it like a little bath in vodka.
Okay.
So you would have this concoction that kind of smells like fish and vodka and garlic, and delicious.
Okay.
And but that helps to get some of the deal with the nematode issues that can happen with garlic. You don't have to do the vodka, but we've had a lot of success with it. And then mulch it super heavy when you put it, and then it's a set it and forget it kind of plant. And in the spring, just move away enough of the mulch to see if it's sprouting, and if it is, then just leave that mulch off of it, and if it's not, put the mulch back.
So what are you using for mulch?
Oh, we just use straw. Regular straw.
Okay. All right, Vicki, I hope that works for you. It doesn't sound too difficult. And you can always drink the vodka while you're doing it, and it'll make it much
like
more fun, right?
Fishy vodka teeny.
Yeah. Okay. I don't think that's going to become popular, but
no,
you never know.
Maybe not.
Our
who
guest
knows?
Is Elizabeth Millard. She is the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening, and she leads workshops on vegetable and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. And she has an organic farm, so she can answer all kinds of questions that you may have about gardening. So give us a call. It's 1-800-642-1234. And we've got some open lines so we can get you on real quick. Or you can always send us an email to talk@wpr.org. Let's go to Jordan in Grafton. Hi, Jordan.
Yes, hello. So I grew this summer Carolina Reaper and the Ghost Chili, and I grew them in pot, and I really had a successful harvest, hundreds of chilies. I'm burning all my friends and family's mouths, but everyone's loving it, though. And I'm making some pretty neat bakery, too, chocolate chip cookies with the Reaper in it.
Oh, my gosh, that sounds amazing.
Yum.
They are so good. But my question is, my plants did so well, and I want to bring them inside for the winter and grow some mass on them so that next summer I can really get a lot of peppers. How am I going to keep these guys alive and going indoors?
Well, the first thing I would do is to transition them in. We were talking about that a little earlier. I don't know if you were listening, but bring so make sure that you get a lot of the roots. Peppers don't have very deep root system, but you want to make sure that they have a nice root ball when you're going to bring them in. You already have them in pots. Is that what you said?
Yep.
Okay, so that's great. So bring the pots into an area that's a transitional space. So either maybe your garage or an unheated porch or something like that. And so that's the first thing to do that's helpful. And then the next thing that you'll want to do when you bring them in indoors is to make sure that you've got enough light and heat going. Peppers, as you know, love heat. And so they might get a little bit stunted because they don't have the same level of heat, but they should survive just fine if you put them in maybe like the warmest room in your house. Usually it's like a laundry room. And just give them a night and day, as I was saying before. So turn on the lights in the morning, probably like around 7 a.m., and then make sure to turn them off at night, because otherwise you'll be stressing your plants with too much light. And so that should work. Make sure to water them. Don't water them too much because they'll start to go dormant, and you don't want to try to wake them up when they're sleeping so happily.
So they're not going to get super big and bushy like he's hoping?
The previous, I can't remember if it was a call or an email that had the tent.
Yes,
that's
email.
If you want them to produce in the winter, then you're going to need to really replicate that outdoor environment, and that would require something more tented. So that's with a reflective tent, gives it a lot of, keeps that humidity in, get some airflow going. So they can get big and bushy, and you can try that with the tenting.
Okay. Well, good luck, Jordan. I'm sure your friends were hoping that those were going to grow all winter, too.
Yeah, you have to send us some of those cookies.
Yeah, we're not too far, Jordan. You could drop by with some of those cookies. let's go to Larry in Whitewater. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. Thanks for taking a call.
You bet.
It's a wonderful show. It's a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you.
Like every year I bring in my fig tree, I bring in my orange tree, my Meyer lemon, and a bay leaf and rosemary and all, but I have a potted ginger. And I wonder, is there anything that would help benefit it, make the transition back in? Should I put it on the hot?
Have you brought it in before and you've had problems?
No, it's the first year with it, and it's so flourished, but it's come in now, and it's kind of, I don't know, it looks a little seedy.
It looks a little sad. I think with ginger, that benefits from more heat, right? Because, we were growing ginger outside this year, and we tented it, and we just gave it, like, so much love. And when the cold snap came, then it was like, I'm done. I'm out. So you want to make sure to give it just maybe a little bit more heat, definitely than the Meyer lemon would need or than the bay leaf. And do a little bottom watering with it. That is another plant that would probably do okay with fish emulsion because it's in a transitional period. So it might just be in a little bit of shock and it needs some more nutrients in the soil, a little bit more love in terms of light and heat.
Okay. Well, Larry, good luck. It sounds like you have a pretty green thumb, so you're probably going
to
be...
I know. We need to go to Larry's house.
I think so. That's pretty impressive. He's got a lot of stuff inside there. Let's tell everybody once again where you're going to be, Elizabeth, in a couple of weeks.
Sure. On November 5th, I will be at the Madison Herb Fair. It is free. It's from 9 to 3. There's a lot of vendors. And I'll be one of three presenters. I'm presenting on indoor gardening at 9:30. And then after that's followed by a presentation on medicinal herbs and then on growing hops, which is always really fun. So everybody should mark their calendar, get down there. And I think there's a lot of vendors, too, so you can buy some fresh herbs, get your fix.
Yeah, apparently they're having vendors, lectures, and some demonstrations, and it's free, and it's in Olbrich Gardens. And if anybody wants to know more information, you should go to the Madison Herb Society's website, which, luckily enough, is madisonherbsociety.org. We've been talking with Elizabeth Millard. She is the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening, and she also leads workshops, like we were talking about, on vegetables and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. And she has an organic farm. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Please stay with us. There's always more to come. We're talking about growing herbs and other eatables today on Garden Talk. Hi, I'm Jill Nadeau, and I'm sitting in for Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm not sure if eatables is a word. I think I heard you use it, Elizabeth, so it must be.
I think edibles.
Edibles.
But it's edibles seems like it would make more sense.
I like it. It's friendlier.
Yeah,
we're speaking with Elizabeth Millard. She's the author of the Indoor Kitchen Gardening book, and she also leads workshops on vegetable and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. And she grows vegetables and I think you said goats and things on her organic farm.
Yes.
Do you have questions for Elizabeth? Well, give us a call. Our number is 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. And you can always post a message on our Facebook page. Just look for The Larry Mueller Show. Excuse me. And Mueller is spelled M-E-I-L-L-E-R. I always have people asking me. And we did have somebody post a picture. It was Catherine, I believe, of her herbs and lemon tree that she brought inside for the winter. And there is a bunch of lemons on that tree. It looks wonderful.
Ooh.
Yeah,
fantastic.
I'm jealous. I'm very jealous. So let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Christine and Franklin. Hi, Christine.
Hi. Actually, I wanted to ask about an outdoor plant, my tomatoes and cucumbers.
Mm-hmm.
I plant them. I have a garden that's against my house, and it gets a lot of sun. I'm in a wooded area, and... when I first moved here, I had no problem planting my tomatoes, anything, and they came up just fantastic. And I moved, well, I was having problems in that area, and then I moved my garden. And every year, the plants come up just real full and beautiful, but then they start withering, turning yellow. Mm-hmm. And even with tomatoes on them, it'll snap off real easy.
Hmm.
And it just goes from one branch to another.
Yeah, when diseases strike tomatoes, it tends to be super annoying in terms of it happening to multiple plants. So with what's turning yellow, are you noticing any, are you having a pest issue? Is it...
could it
be anything like that, like hornworms or something?
Could it be spiders that do that? I know.
It does. It's sounding like a kind of a pest issue to me.
Well, I do have a question for you, Christine. Do you have any black walnuts in your area?
No.
You don't? Okay. Because they can do that exact same thing if you have them around. So not that. Okay.
Well, again, I'm going to go back to my trusty little fish emulsion. Anytime our especially our tomatoes, we use fish emulsion on our tomatoes all the time. So probably on maybe like every other week.
Oh.
because it sounds like they might be having a bit of a nutritional deficiency. So they're coming up nice and strong and everything, but then they don't, it sounds like they're not getting enough nutrition to fruit properly and to stay strong. So you're giving them a great start, so that means that the soil is doing well, but it might just need a boost during that next phase of growth. So that's what I would try, definitely, is just some fish emulsion and see if that helps, because that's helped our tomato plants many times in the past. And if you are having a pest issue, this will make the tomato plants stronger to be able to withstand that and to kind of fight back.
And Christine, like we said before, too, you can always talk to your extension office. Mm-hmm. They have lots of stuff that they can help you with. If it's a disease or if it's an insect, they'll be able to help you pinpoint that. So
yeah. And that's really good advice, because your extension office knows your area
right.
really well. And there might be issues going on, you know, with other growers that you don't know about, and there's a trend.
Yes, it's a trend. Okay, well, good luck, Christine. Let's go to John in Princeton. Hi, John.
Hello.
What's your question?
Well, what it is that I have a little slight problem. I couldn't grow much in my garden. It wouldn't grow hardly anything, actually. It would grow, but then I wouldn't get very much off from it, and nothing would really produce anything. But I planted a couple of plants of oregano, and it's about 3 years ago. Well, now I have a half a garden of oregano.
Oh, that sounds like it smells nice.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. I have, it's got to be about 24 by 36, all oregano.
Oh, my gosh.
Wow. That's impressive.
Are you selling this?
Yeah.
I don't do nothing with it.
And become a vendor.
There you go.
Sell oregano.
There's farmers markets that would love to see your oregano, I'm sure, John. I take it you don't want oregano on half your garden, though.
Well, I put different things in the other side. I till it up and I do things. I can grow stuff in pots, but it won't grow in the garden. But it's kind of strange, because the oregano, I don't do nothing with it. I leave it the way that it is, even through the winter. And it comes up the next year, and I got more the next year.
Wow, that sounds nice. Well, oregano can sometimes grow pretty well in poor soil, same as some other plants can just thrive. So you might want to do, if you don't want a complete garden full of oregano, you can take it out, but then just do a little bit more soil prep. Do a little bit more with compost and, you know, the fish emulsion, or just get more nutrients in there. You might even want to consider a cover crop. So whatever, and that's another great thing to talk to your extension office about, whatever cover crop might work with you. We do rye here, so we make sure that our garden, it never has a bare soil. We don't ever use bare soil. So there's always something growing in our garden. And then that cover crop could be tilled under. It will be green manure for the next year. So that works really well for us to just kind of keep that soil health going.
Okay. Well, good luck with you, John. Sounds like you have quite a project, but if you like oregano, you're in good shape.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It could be the corner of the market.
There you go. Let's talk to Bart in Madison. Hi, Bart. What's your question?
Oh, yeah, thanks for the show. I do have a hops question. I just recently harvested a lot of my hops on the trellis, and probably half of it is brown and the other half is green. And I'm wondering if you know if I should separate that out, or if it's, you know, I'm sure it has less flavor for brewing than the green part.
Did you check the moisture content level? Is that how you knew when to harvest them?
No, not really. I just let it go too long, and then.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would separate out the brown, because if you're going to try to use that, it might be kind of bitter. We harvest when it's green, almost brown, and then what we do is take that and vacuum seal it, and then freeze it. And that works really well. But the if you let it go too long and it's too brown, it's going to dry out. Do you use it for beer?
Yeah.
So it might not work as well
the brown might not work as well. But the good news is you can still use it as tea. So a hop, I don't know if you ever make hop tea, but if you dry it out and then make it for hops, it's really good for as a sleep aid.
Hmm. Well, there you go. Won't waste anything, Bart.
That's right.
So what do you use it for beer, Elizabeth?
Yeah.
You do?
Yeah,
okay.
You can brew, you can use it with a beer. It's really great to get like a beer kit, and then you can use your fresh hops.
Wonderful.
For that. And another plug for the Madison Herb Fair is that there will be a whole session on hops.
Right.
By somebody that knows a ton more than I do about it.
So, Bart, make sure you go to the Herb Fair on November 5th over at Olbert Gardens, and all your questions will be answered.
Yeah, bring your hops.
There you go. There you go. Trisha on email wondered what the ratio of vodka to fish emulsion to water is, and do you just use that as in a watering can to apply it? And then another caller had missed what you use the garlic, why you use the garlic, and wanted to know why and when.
Why we use those things on the garlic?
I guess so, yeah.
So we use those as, it's basically a preventative measure against any kind of bugs or nematodes. It's also kind of an antibacterial. You can just plant the garlic without this kind of prep,
but
we've had a lot of success with growing really nice garlic with this kind of system, I guess. So in terms of the ratio, like I said before, the fish emulsion can be heavily diluted. So we just take a pan, like a big bowl.
Soup pan kind of thing?
Yeah, like your biggest bowl,
okay,
for example. It depends on how much you're going to do. And then the best thing with the vodka is it can be any vodka. So obviously like a high proof. You're not going to use like organic vodka or anything like that. So you just go in, you get like the worst possible vodka in a giant plastic thing. The last time I did that, I just put it on the counter and the guy's like, oh, big weekend plans. And I'm like, not the way you're thinking. But so just take that garlic, fill up your bowl halfway, and then put in, I would say, maybe like 2 tablespoons of the fish emulsion. You don't need any water. Swirl it around, and then take those cloves and just let them sit in there for 5 minutes.
Before you
plant it. Yeah, okay. You don't have to do an overnight thing. It doesn't have to be elaborate. It's just a nice kind of, it inoculates it.
Sure.
That's what I was looking for. It inoculates the plant.
Okay. Well, it's like, it's alcohol, so it's going to kill a lot of stuff. So
it kills whatever bad critters might be there.
All right. Well, Trish, hopefully that answered your question. Let's go back to the phones. We've got Laura from Superior. Hi, Laura.
Laura.
Okay.
There she is.
There we are. Hi, Laura.
I have a question about a green tomato I have, but I first wanted to put a plug in for lemon thyme.
That's
one of the things I grow, and I was delighted last year to find that it wintered, and it was about 3 times the size of the original plant this summer. So
nice.
I really am using it today as I put it on some scrambled eggs.
Oh, fantastic.
That sounds good.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about how I can pickle this wonderful organic green tomato that I have from my share. And I've had them at restaurants, but I didn't know what to do with it.
Okay. Well, do you do a lot of pickling?
No.
Okay. Well, you can do a quick pickle. Did you want to, is it a lot of tomatoes, or are you looking to cook?
No, it's just one
okay.
good size one.
So you can do a quick pickle that is a refrigerator pickle. So you don't have to can it, you don't have to do the water bath or any kind of crazy stuff like that. So a quick pickle is basically just vinegar, whatever spices you want. I usually like to use, I'll throw in a couple bay leaves, I'll put in some garlic, and I like to use a cider vinegar, and you use some kind of sweetener if you want, like a little bit of honey or a little bit of maple syrup. You don't need to worry about acidity the way that you would if you were canning it, because it's going to be in the fridge. So there's a lot of there's a really good Michael Simon recipe that I follow sometimes. It's Simon is S-Y-M-O-N. I think he's on TV somewhere, like Food Network or something. But if you look that up, like a green pickled tomato thing, and the best thing about a quick pickle is it's quick. So you just make it tonight and you can eat it tomorrow. But the longer you let it sit, the better it gets. So I would wait for maybe like a week to have it. And sometimes I quick pickle something with just a little bit of sugar and a lot of vinegar, some pickling spice, and that's it. I mean, you just heat it up together. You put the tomatoes or you put whatever you're going to pickle into the jar, and you pour it over that, and then just make sure there's no little air bubbles, and then put a top on it and put it in the fridge.
And you can do that with all kinds of vegetables, can't you?
Yeah, I've done it with a ton of different. Whenever I have an overabundance, like in around July or August, I just make pickled vegetables. We've always got some in our fridge.
How long does that last?
You know, I've just never had them go bad.
So oh, wow.
I'm not sure how long it lasts, but I've tried some. This is maybe not great advice, but I've tried some after a couple months, and they're fine. So...
Well, they're pickled, so...
Yeah, they're pickled. I think, you know, if you eat them within a couple... They're so good, we usually eat them within a couple weeks.
Yeah, okay. Well, good luck with that that tomato. I want to hear how it goes, Laura, so let us know.
That sounds like fun.
It does. Our guest is Elizabeth Millard, and she can talk about vegetables growing inside, outside, organic. Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. You can also send us an email, and that's talk@WPR.org. We have open lines, so we'd love to hear from you. Let's go to Rich in Spooner. Hi, Rich.
Hi. How are you doing today?
Good.
Well, thanks.
So I have a couple comments, but my question is I'd like to start some micro tom type tomatoes inside and then use them for like Christmas presents and stuff.
Oh, what a great idea.
Yeah, and then also, like when to start, and then the ones that I keep, wondering if I should stagger planting so that I can get tomatoes through the latter part of winter, or if, because I think they're pretty sure they're a determinant, and just wondering if I should stagger planting so that I can keep getting tomatoes until next spring or whatever.
Elizabeth, yeah. Why don't you tell us what micro-tom tomatoes are, and for those who don't know?
I actually don't know.
Okay, Rich, why don't you tell us?
They're a super dwarf plant that doesn't really get very big at all.
Oh, okay. All right.
Maybe 6 or 10 or so inches tall, and then they have little cherry tomatoes on them, little tiny cherry tomatoes.
Oh, my gosh, that's totally what I'm growing next. Thank you.
Okay, well, what do you think, Elizabeth? What should he be doing?
Well, yeah, those dwarf varieties are fantastic to grow inside, so that's a great choice. I would stagger it. I think you're going to have to give it a lot more heat and love when it gets colder because it gets drier in a house. So you want to keep on top of the watering. As you probably already know, the tomatoes love water when it's a dry environment. So you want to do that. You want to make sure that the light is close enough so that it won't get heat off of that, but you're going to want it's going to want like a lot of light. So you can. This is another situation where you could also tent it, and that keeps some of the moisture and humidity in. I think staggering is a great idea, and then it also gives you a good indication of what works best at what time. So another thing that I always like to advise people is keep a log. I don't know if you keep a log of your indoor growing efforts, but it's super helpful for me to look back at my notes and say, oh, yeah, this is probably why basil is not working for me. Like I've said, it's all an experiment, so it's good to kind of treat it sometimes like an experiment, how much you watered, how much light you gave it, what works, what doesn't.
Excellent. Okay. Well, Rich, I hope those work out for you. I wouldn't mind being on your Christmas list. That would be,
yeah, no kidding.
You know, speaking about holiday gifts, do you use things from your garden, your herbs, for making gifts for your friends and family?
Yes, we do a ton of stuff like that. One of our favorite gifts to give is herb salts. So we just take fresh herbs from the garden or dried and chop them up. Probably people have probably gotten their herbs by now, but if they haven't, then this is a nice idea to bring them in. That lemon thyme would be perfect.
Oh, yes.
You chop them up, and then I put them in the food processor just for a moment with a bunch of kosher salts, and then just give it a couple quick spins, so not so much that it pulverizes everything, but that it blends it together. And then you can keep it in the fridge. It's salt, so it lasts forever and ever. And it's just so much fun to use those salts and sprinkle them on things. Like we've done a mint rosemary salt, or we did a parsley and thyme salt. And you can put it on eggs. You can put it on anything. And it's just a nice kind of burst of flavor.
Oh, that sounds really good. How did your vegetables do this year?
It was kind of mixed. Our garlic was amazing. our ginger did really well. But our tomatoes were not. Our tomatoes were okay, but you know, we heard from a lot of other people around here. It's just because it was a lot of flash flooding. So it's like too much water and then dry, and too much water and then dry. And so that's something else that can really stress the plants. And we did our best, but we've had better tomato years. But everything else turned out pretty well.
Yeah, it all depends, doesn't it?
That
weather. Did you experiment with any new varieties at all?
We, even though we're zone three, so there's not much we can do, but we thought, what the heck, we're going to try to grow turmeric. And so we got some starter turmeric seed, because as long as we were growing ginger anyway. And,
sure.
And we actually did get some out of it, and we were excited about that. So I think next year we've got some tweaking to do, but we're doing that. We also did some mushrooms. So we did some nice wine caps that we threw into some sawdust, and that came out really well. So we were happy about that.
Oh, mushrooms. Now that sounds interesting. Yeah. Is this the first time you've tried that?
We've grown mushrooms on logs before. So we've grown shiitake and oyster and some lion mane, but this is our first time with wine caps, and we just wanted something super simple and easy. And if somebody wants a really easy mushroom project, wine caps are the way to go.
Wine caps. Okay. Well, that's good to know. And then real quick, we just want to make sure that people know that you're going to be in Madison on November 5th at the annual Herb Fair at Ulbrich Gardens. Thanks so much for joining us today, Elizabeth. We really had a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And Elizabeth has been our guest, and she's the author of Indoor Kitchen Gardening. She also leads workshops on vegetables and herb gardening, as well as herb preparation, fermentation, and cooking with seasonal ingredients. I want to thank K.P. Whaley for on-air production today, and Dave Potras for technical direction. Next week on Garden Talk, Liz Freemuth from The Garden Hoe will be with us to talk about wrapping evergreens and overwintering plants and doing all that good stuff that we have to do in the fall. We hope you can join us. I'm Jill Nadeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Stay with us. There's more to come on Wisconsin Public Radio.